Mic check. 3, 2, 1.
What are you doing? What are we doing here, Hannah? 3, 2, 1. What's up with the mic check?
Well, Leela, it's what we've been doing for our jobs for years. It's what we do at the start of every interview, every episode. It's just people don't get to hear it.
We test the mic.
Mic check, check, test.
1, 2, 3. But why are we doing this now? Because the show has already begun. Why are we giving people this behind the scenes mic checkity check?
Because, Leela, the mic check, it signifies something. It means I'm getting ready to talk. So I need your attention now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it says, it's time to listen to me. I got a story to tell, something you need to lean into.
Yeah, but for Black women journalists, it hasn't always been an easy path to get folks to listen to
you. That's for sure. That's true.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. It's Black History Month.
It's Black History Month all year long on the stoop.
Yes, I know, Leela, but today we're going to talk about Black women in media. Where we've come from, and where we're at.
The first time I was exposed to a professional newsroom, it was like, bam, this is what I want to do. Mm. It was people were crazy, they were yelling, it was like all this energy, and I was like, what are they doing? And I want to do that.
All right, today we're talking journalism. That's journalist Jemele Hill, and you'll be hearing more from her later in the show.
She's got a lot to say, so let's do it.
All right, check, 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 1, 2, 3.
Okay,
1, 2, 3, check,
yeah,
check.
We're ready. We got it. Let's dupe this out.
The stoop.
The stoop.
The stoop.
The stoop.
Stories from across the Black diaspora
that we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a Black woman walks up to the desk in labor, what preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
The stoop. So today, Leela, we're looking inward. We're looking at ourselves as women journalists, Black women journalists. How did we get here and why? Leela, when did you know you wanted to be a journalist?
I remember it really clear. I was actually living in Cuba at the time. I was doing a study abroad program that I ended up staying there for a couple years longer. And I literally knocked on the door of the newspaper, the national newspaper outlet, and I said, could I write some stories about my experience here? And they were like, yes, do it. Go for it. And that's where I first started experiencing what it is to interview and do journalism, and I actually absolutely loved it. What about you?
I mean, for me, I was back in Sudan, I was in college, and I would always listen to the radio while I was studying, and the English language news came on, and I was like, man, I would love to do that, you know? And I grew up with like storytelling in the family, and radio was big, but that was when, you know, I just called them up and said, can you guys take me in as an intern? I was in my third year of college, and they said yes, and the rest is history.
I love how we both just knocked on the doors of places and just, you know, said, take me, take me.
But there are so many women in media who had done that, right? Who've paved the way for us.
An ABC News brief brought to you by Riuniti Spumante. Now from Washington, Carol Simpson.
Good evening. Roger Patterson, the American Nicaragua said was killed last month while fighting along.
Enter the 1979 season with the same goal, to enter their name on the passport to Pasadena.
Oh, she is being called a little hero, a five-year-old Long Island girl.
Well, Richard, nothing's going to keep students away from Chicago's Providence St. Mel High School today. The students at the all-Black inner-city school had been told their school would close because the Chicago Archdiocese had run out of money. But the students fought to keep St. Mel open to prove they're good.
Yeah, people like you just heard. Carol Simpson, Jane Kennedy, Carol Jenkins, and Leela, we know that last voice. Oprah.
Go Opes.
Go Opes. But let's talk about getting into this line of work, because Leela, it's not an easy field to be in. Not to mention, it's a pretty lonely field for Black women.
Yeah, there's this statistic. In 2018, Black women made up just 3.4% of U.S. newsrooms. And since it's Black History Month all year long on The Stoop, we wanted to take some time to celebrate where we've been, where we're at, and where we're going.
Right. So let's start with where we've been. And that's where this woman comes in.
My name is Belva Davis, and I consider myself a journalist even to today.
So Belva Davis was the first Black woman to become a TV reporter on the West Coast in the 60s.
She covered the Berkeley riots of the free speech movement. She covered the Black Panthers, the Jonestown massacre.
Good evening and welcome once again to A Closer Look. I'm Belva Davis. Tonight we'll report on some of the background behind the People's Temple, including the...
And she covered the George Moscone and Harvey Milk assassinations, the AIDS and crack epidemics. She is an icon.
I think one never really can get over the idea once it's in your head that you're a journalist.
So back in the 50s, when Belva first started, there were few places that Black journalists could work. I mean, most of them worked in Black media. And Belva started as a writer at Jet Magazine.
And then after the 1964 Civil Rights Act, she moved into radio. She was reporting for KSAN in San Francisco. And she remembers going for her first job.
After many, many interviews, and some of them pretty insulting, that I would think I should even be interviewed. Well, the one I quote all the time, I don't want to beat up on these people forever in life. It was so many years ago, but, you know, that in one station, you know, I was just told that they hadn't thought about hiring Negresses yet. But if they ever really wanted to pursue a Negress, they would certainly get in touch with me first because I'd been on radio. And then the guy didn't know that he was being insulting. Until I wrote a book, I think, did he really know that how much that had hurt.
Not hiring Negresses, she said. She said it. They said it.
I know. They said it. Whew. So Belva went from print to radio, and her next step was going to work as a reporter in television.
The first day, I think, I was just too petrified or really trying to let my reality catch up with my mental state.
So most of her crew was white and male, and she remembers how awkward that was back in the day when people would catch a glimpse of her and her team on the streets reporting.
There was the discomfort of even, you know, walking down the street with me. I try to actually bring stories to the newsroom. And I also tried to get assigned to the most difficult stories that I could so that I could get over the period of having to, you know, prove myself. I always thought a lot about the people who paid forward for me. So whatever was happening because some student had his head busted open, some person had been pushed off a bus, some people had marched miles for me to get where I was. And I thought of them as paying my way. So it wasn't just me. So it was my obligation that if they reflected on it and there was one person they'd impacted, that I recognized that. So I don't think that I ever felt real anger. I kept trying to figure out how do I make people who'd given up so much just feel at least that I'm trying. Whether I make a difference or not, I'm trying. And I'm trying for you and me.
So Belva said this thing, and it sticks with me, Hannah. It's this idea of paying it forward. And I gotta say, that's what I was told to do. And I think that's what a lot of us were told to do. But damn, that's a job.
I mean, yes, we talk a lot about mentorship. And it's something that just comes with the territory in this field, right? Like, you want to lift other young journalists of color up. And that's just what we do. It's a big part of what we do to get more people on board.
Because the more of us that are on the air, the more we get to share our stories and share our voices. I mean, like this voice.
Well, so the Japanese asked Trump to visit this month because they wanted him to be the first state guest to meet with Emperor Naruhito, who ascended to the throne this month.
Yes, we know who that is. That's Aisha Roscoe from NPR.
Yep, she's the NPR White House reporter, and she's great. And the reason why we wanted to share her voice is because there's a lot of talk right now about how newsrooms sound or how they should sound.
And North Korea, on the other, being confrontational. Prime Minister Abe has really invested a lot into developing a personal relationship with Trump.
Yeah, and Aisha, she just sounds like herself. I mean, I can tell she's a Black woman when I hear her voice. And that is just so damn refreshing, Leila. Especially, you know, since we've been taught, I mean, some of us have been taught to sound a certain way on the air. Like back in the day when I was training, they would actually tell us that we needed to speak in a, quote, neutral American English. That's what they called it.
You don't have to code that for me. I know what that means.
Exactly. So, like, we were trained to lose the accent, whatever accent we had, you know, losing any identifiers that some people thought would distract the listeners, right?
And it's funny you should say that, because now newsrooms are really trying to diversify voices and they have people like Aisha on the air, but there's a lot of pushback from listeners still. I mean, some people have really made it known what they think about Aisha on the air.
I realize it's just my decades of conditioning and how real reporters speak. But to me, she sounds like a college intern. It's slightly distracting.
For so many people, Aisha Roscoe is the representation they haven't heard on NPR, like, ever.
When I hear her voice, I think that she doesn't have enough gravitas to be a reporter, but that's my lingering racism. All I've noticed is a nasal sound and twangy speech.
That new gal, Aisha Roscoe, trying to not sound ghetto.
Aisha has my favorite voice on NPR.
And this is something that comes up a lot in this field, in media, right? You get a lot of feedback on how you sound, about your vocal fry, about your accent, about your tone. And this is the criticism that comes with the job.
Aisha Roscoe, NPR News, Washington.
Leila, that's a lot to take in.
I think of this issue, and I've had this conversation with other people listening to podcasts and radio who feel that they are much more critical. I'm talking about Black people feeling much more critical of some of the Black hosts because they're just not used to hearing those voices on the air, not used to hearing a Black voice on the air. So they've told me, I'm not going to name any names, but I have people that have told me, like, I don't know how comfortable I feel with hearing these conversations spoken in this way, in this very natural, like, Black way. And so it's like about retraining ourselves, right?
Because we've been conditioned to believe that these are the kinds of voices that you might hear at home and you might hear at the hair salon, but you can't hear them over the radio. And that's a problem.
Yeah, it is a problem. And we need to hear more of them.
Yes, we do. So, Leila, that's radio, right? But then there's the visual.
Of course. On TV, it's another story. It's all about image and, you know, how you look.
Yeah, and a lot of the times, our bodies are the focus. Remember that Dallas reporter, Demetria Obelor?
Yes, she was body shamed by some viewers, and someone even emailed and said that her natural hair must be hard to clean and that it smelled bad. I mean, and she dealt with it.
Demetria Obelor woke up today to find that someone had made a public post about her size and her clothes. Demetria took to Facebook to say this.
The controversy is coming from people who aren't too happy with the way that I look on television, saying, oh, her body is too big for that dress, or she's too curvy, or her hair is unprofessional, it's crazy, we don't like it. A quick word to those people, this is the way that I'm built, this is the way that I was born, I'm not going anywhere, so if you don't like it, you have your options.
Welcome aboard, Demetria. Wipe this dust off your shoulders.
Leela, you know, this whole situation reminds me of this scene from Being Mary Jane. It's that Gabrielle Union show where she plays a Black TV anchor.
Right.
So one night, her hairstylist can't make it. She's got work in the morning, and she is desperate to get her hair done. She calls her niece, and the niece runs over to put her weave in.
You know why I begged you to come over here? Because your perfect aunt was terrified of going to work without her weave.
And then, Leela, there's this honest moment where she really lets out how vulnerable she was feeling because her natural hair was out. And she, like, relied on this weave for her job.
Terrified that no one would think I was beautiful, that people would think I was average and I'd be invisible.
There's a lot to consider when you're going into journalism. I mean, we aren't trying to scare anyone away, but I mean, you gotta have some thick skin sometimes. And there's one journalist who has a lot to say about what it means to be in this field. Journalist Jemele Hill.
With all due respect, talking about this doesn't represent America, this very much, who these women are, very much does represent America. And it's just there's a lot of people in our country don't want to acknowledge or don't want to accept that fact. And so therefore, it's so easy to paint.
She's always been a name who's been front and center in sports journalism. Before TV, she was in print, writing for newspapers. And she started just like a lot of us, you know, being the only.
Right, so we're going to hear more about all this from this conversation I had with her at UC Berkeley. It was a live event, so you may hear some coughs or some laughs and some things, but I really wanted to share this with our Stoop audience, how Jemele got started and where she's at now.
I've always been an observer, so I'll kind of watch a situation, and then when I feel, you know, like I need to summon Thor's hammer, I will. So I'm more strategic with it than
anything.
And
like you've always been that way? Like,
I have always been that way. Huh. That more observer, because you can, you know, learn a lot more by listening. Mm. What's the old adage? God gave you 2 ears for a reason and one mouth, right? So I always like to kind of watch and see how people are and react and just assess the situation that way.
So all of this translated into her first job in journalism.
So, Hannah, are we going to talk about when Jemele had her dream job in journalism at ESPN, and then she tweeted about President Trump having racist policies, and then the White House chimed in that her tweet was a fireable offense, and then she left that job? Ooh, that was a scandal.
Okay, Leela, we will get into all of that. But first, I just wanted to talk about how she even got there. Like, Leela, it's an uphill battle. For Jemele, she started her career in sports, right? So that meant that she was at that intersection between being one of the few women reporting in a locker room and also being one of the few Black people reporting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's an isolating place. I mean, as you know, is that when I was at the Orlando Sentinel and I was the sports columnist there, my first, you know, columnist job, and I was the only Black female sports reporter, or sports columnist, excuse me, at a daily newspaper in North America. Not America, North America. that is not something to be proud of. Not for me, it's an embarrassment. And
with all due respect, talking about this doesn't represent America, this very much, who these women are very much does represent America. And it's just there's a lot of people in our country don't want to acknowledge or don't want to accept that fact.
So therefore, it's so easy to paint
outspoken women as being what is wrong with this country. It's so funny to me that they aren't allowed to say what they see as inequity, what they see as problematic in this country. But Donald Trump, the white man, he's allowed to run an entire campaign about why this country isn't great
and help that transition less so. Because the thing is that when you walk into these environments, you're on their turf, right? This is the clubhouse. They don't like reporters in there. Look, we don't want to be there any more than they want us there. We just are trying to do our jobs and that's it. And when you come in these situations and I'm either one of three or all three at once, where I'm either the only black person in there, the only woman in there, or the only black woman in there, or as I said, all three.
Yep.
And so you feel as if there's a spotlight following you everywhere you go. I'm trying to blend in, but you can't really blend in and in that situation. So with reps, it took me some time to kind of get over that anxiety of being in the locker room.
So Jamel became a major name in sports reporting. Then she took that leap into television.
Okay, so going from print to broadcast journalism, this is where that voice we talked about would matter.
Right. Voice and image.
A whole different world.
Yeah. Well, when Jamel made the move to television, she wasn't having it. She made it very, very clear.
I told every agent that I had, if they ever come to you and say something about my hair, I promise you that's the last day I'm going to be on air.
So she set her rules early.
Yeah, but, you know, that's Jamel. That's her personality. She asserts what she wants, and she's bold like that. But that's not easy for everyone, and she gets that.
This is the thing of how it works in television. If you have enough zeros in your contract, you can pretty much demand what you want. And I even never thought to ask it because I was super low on the totem pole with my two zeros. So they weren't gonna listen to me. And it was never a conversation for me. However, with many a black woman in local markets, in smaller places than ESPN, it is unfortunately a conversation. And it's worse there because they don't have the leverage to really say anything. Because when you're making your way and you have this on-air job that you need in order to get to the next step, and if the general manager or the person in charge of your show or the producer comes to you and say, we need you to change your hair, then you, in that moment, I don't judge any woman who decides to do it because you're trying to get to a place. I judge the people who ask you to do it more so than anything. So. Unfortunately, it is a conversation, not just for women, but for black men too, black men with dreadlocks. It's a huge conversation. You know, this kid once asked me, he had dreadlocks, nice, neat, well-kept, great style, handsome, looked good. He said that multiple people at his station had told him his hair was a distraction and he was wondering where to cut it. And I was like, I hate myself for telling you this, but if you're willing to walk away, that's one thing. But you know you can't afford to walk away. So for now, unfortunately, you have to cut it, if that's what they're telling you. And it was such a sickening feeling to have to tell him that, but it was the truth of what he faced. I was like, but here's what you can do. The next time you get in a position, particularly if they have put enough zeros in that contract, you grow your hair long as hell and dare them to do something about it.
You know, Leela, listening to Jamel talk like that, sadly, I mean, that is real advice for the real world. We can sit here all day and say, you be you, you do you, you know, but at the end of the day, when you're young and you're just getting in these fields, sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do to get in and then get good at what you do, and then you get to call the shots. And it's hard to hear that sometimes.
And even though we're talking about media here, let's not forget how this plays out everywhere. I actually recently had a conversation with a friend who still won't get braids because she feels afraid that people around her and her corporate job are going to have issue with it. I mean, what year are we in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame, but it's real. And Leela, there's something else Jamel had to deal with. Speaking your mind, being assertive, you know, having opinions, and voicing them in a strong way.
So, like that tweet I was talking about that Jemele Hill had fired off, and it caught a lot of attention.
So she was a reporter with ESPN, and like a lot of us, she had a lot to say about the movement where so many sports players were taking the knee. Here she is on her ESPN show SportsCenter.
So let me get this straight. Hit a woman, be accused of sexual assault, commit sexual assault. You do all those things. And they don't come out and say they don't call anybody an embarrassment. I've seen far more press conferences of GMs and owners and coaches sticking by their guys amid some pretty murky and disgusting circumstances. But that's all good. But here's somebody who's trying to stand for justice and for equality, and you consider that to be somehow embarrassing your NFL that has no problem employing some people who have done some pretty undesirable things.
And then she tweeted,
Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists.
It was chaos. ESPN had a statement distancing themselves from her comment. And then the Trump administration's spokesperson at the time said it was a fireable offense. Then Jemele said she regretted that it seemed like she was speaking for ESPN. And eventually she was suspended from ESPN.
It changed my life. It changed it because, as you alluded, my profile sort of exploded. And it changed just in the type of attention that I get now that is way different than it was before. It more upset my life than anything. It didn't make me feel any kind of way about what was said about me. Yeah. I didn't internalize any of that. It just, I had to adjust to more people knowing me. I had to adjust to the fact that there are, and I mean this literally, more people who want to kill me. So I had to adjust to those things.
Yeah, but she didn't back down from the sentiment she was expressing. And although she's not at ESPN anymore, she still writes on all these topics for The Atlantic. But this got people talking about how Black women are seen when they're assertive.
The angry Black woman. When the stereotype of the angry Black woman is evoked, it characterizes Black women as irrationally angry, hyper-aggressive, verbally abusive, raucous, and argumentative.
That was from an article in The Guardian.
Yeah, it was fiery. And basically, the author, Amir Hassan Loggins, was arguing that her anger was justified, but the stereotype overtakes this justifiable anger.
It is a weapon used by character assassins looking to shoot Black women down who have the audacity to magnify social inequality, point a spotlight on uncomfortable truths, and publicly advocate for the human rights of Black women specifically.
And Jemele, you know, she emerged from that experience, but she started to get backlash, and it was real and it was scary.
I had to shut off my voicemail entirely. And I was like, you know what? I don't even need this in my life. And I just told ESPN security to dismantle it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just immediately when I went out in public spaces, you know, me and, you know, my husband, we went to a Monday night football game with his dad and another friend of mine, and we had to have security. So just in case, you know, the thing is, they know me, I don't know them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with some of them saying some of the things that they had, you just never know when somebody's gonna jump stupid. And it wasn't until recently that I actually read some of the snail mail that I received during that time. And it was harsh. It was some bad stuff in there. And on Facebook, I've gotten plenty of death threats and that sort of thing. So it just upsets your life in that regard, where it makes you a little more cautious about where you are publicly. And I do think the generation behind me has already gotten it so much quicker than mine did. And I think that's all most of us can be in it for. You just hope the people that are behind you, that they just wind up being better than you. And so when people come up to me and say, I want to be just like you, I was like, no, you don't. You want to be better than me.
One of the reasons, Hannah, why we wanted to do this episode was to kind of demystify the whole experience of being a journalist. the idea that we can have these stories within us and want to share them, and we can learn these formats and systems and be able to tell these stories in a way that, you know, that really makes sense and really engages people. It's not like an exclusive thing. You know, I think a lot of people are scared of this field, and it's fun.
I think it's intimidating for a lot of people, and for sure for not just, you know, for women, for Black people, and for women of color. It's not easy and it's hard, but as we just heard, you know, from today's show, it's not an easy path, but it can be done. And once you're there, you got it. And you can do wonders with it.
Yeah. And speaking of getting there, how about listeners help us get there by pitching some story ideas? Do you have an idea that you think would be great on the stoop? We want to hear it. Why don't you slide into our DMs at The Stoop Podcast on Twitter, or you can email us at hangout@thestoop.org. There's so many people that have great, amazing stories, and sometimes we can help you make them.
We are waiting for you.
And that's The Stoop.
Thanks to sound engineer James Rollins, episode art by Nima Iyer, producer Natalie Pear, music by Daoud Anthony. Thanks to Martina Castro.
Support for The Stoop comes from California Humanities, a nonprofit member of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org. Special thanks to the NPR Story Lab. Our radio home is KALW.
And if you want to hear an in-depth interview we had with journalist Jamel Hill, make sure to subscribe to our other podcast, Stoop Talks, on a new podcast platform called Luminary.
Luminary. You can't miss it. Bright yellow, bold, luminary. Find us there. And in honor of Black History Month and the Black women who paved the way for us, we're going to leave you today with the words of the mother of Black journalists, Miss Ida B. Wells. These words are going to be read by poet Janae Darden.
The people must know before they can act, and there is no educator to compare with the press. I'd rather go down in history as one lone Negro who dared to tell the government that it had done a dastardly thing than to save my skin by taking back what I said. The way to right wrongs is to turn the light of truth upon them. One had better die fighting against injustice than to die like a dog or a rat in a trap. There must always be a remedy for wrong and injustice if we only know how to find it.